Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome.
Welcome
to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
And the other half, Greg Bresnitz.
Did you want me to introduce you?
Yeah. I kind of thought it'd be nice.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half the host, Darren Bresnitz, staring at the well-coiffed, freshly gymmed Greg Bresnitz. How are those glutes?
Glutes are good.
What do you
know? We got. Well, I mean, you just got off your six-month job run. We got to get back into like a patter.
Oh, I never lost it. I just practiced at home. I would listen to the episodes that you were on, and then I would jump in with jokes, which all killed. All killed. It's President's Day. And that means we are joined by the currently detoxing Jordana Rothman.
I'm back again.
Back again.
Here I am. Causing some trouble.
Hey, quick thing. Any changes in the last year?
Yes. So this time last year, I was the food and drink editor at Time Out New York, which I enjoyed thoroughly. And I actually just left. I left in October to freelance and chase down a book project and some other stuff that I'm working on. So I'm a free agent now. I can do all sorts of things.
Where can listeners send like pitches to?
Well, any publicist that's asked for my information the past few months, I've been really sort of obnoxious to because I don't want to get on press lists. Press lists are the worst. You know, I don't want 30 pitches a day about things that I'm never going to write about. So I'm actually being a little bit shady about it. But if you have something really good to tell me, then you can probably
just tweet
me.
At her. Jordana
tweet
Rothman.
At me. Tweet yeah. at Jordana Rothman. You can
okay.
find me.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Look, if you can't pique your interest in 140 characters or less, you're wasting your time.
I'm trying to track somebody down, and I'm just going to tweet at them and see how that goes.
Yeah.
Who?
Someone from the Mad Museum. Their curator for one of the events we're working on.
I was just there yesterday.
Oh.
For the Art of Scent exhibit, which is exceptional, and I smell amazing, as I've told both of you already today.
Yeah. I'm still not going to come smell you.
I smell so good.
Okay, I'm sitting closer. She smells wonderful.
Really? I'm going to just tell you something. So this exhibit is fascinating, and it has particular interest to me because I obviously, as you might know, perhaps some of our listeners might know, I really love booze.
Yeah.
And I'm really passionate about like tasting notes and finding a way to democratize them and not sound quite so obnoxious. And I think there's like this real corollary between the conversation around perfume and the conversation around booze. And so at the Art of Scent, it's like really perfume has this like really quantified way to talk about its top notes and its middle notes and all that. And it's really just like it was just an incredible kind of thing to go there and smell these beautiful classical perfumes and kind of see the points of connectivity between booze and perfume.
Do you find that when you talk about wine, you have airs about you, or it's a little pretentious?
I don't talk a lot about wine. I mean, you know, I talk a lot about booze. I prefer, you know, spirits. But, you know, that being said, I think, you know, I don't think it's airs. I mean, I think it can go there, but I do think that it's really about having the ability to, like, evoke an emotional scent.
Yeah. I got you. No, I totally agree.
You got distracted by food coming in.
Yeah.
The end of that story is that I basically, so I dragged one of my friends to come with me, the wonderful bartender Don Lee, who's done a lot of lectures about perfume and so forth. And I just basically stuck my face in all of these like scent, these scent like aromatizers. And I
just like running your like wrist across.
Then I discovered a few new things. So,
did you guys see that Maker's Mark reversed their decision?
That was contentious. Yeah, that's a big.
So, if we're going to talk about booze, we can quickly get into, for those who missed it, Maker's Mark, and this is due to the rise in the popularity of bourbon,
mm-hmm.
said that they were going to more or less water down their.
That's right. They were going to bring down the proof.
Their proof, and they tested it. They did it. In all honesty, other than the decision being incredibly stupid, they did the right thing. They reached out to their ambassadors. They tried to make it be like, hey, like, we're really sorry. We're going to do the best we can. And rightfully so, everyone had it, you know, freaked out. But one of the important things was they quickly realized their mistake. But the people who are fans of Maker's Mark, when they wrote back to them, said, like, we're willing to deal with less availability and outages if you don't change the product.
Well, you know, I found the whole conversation around that really interesting because to me, so from a sort of connoisseur perspective, you know, my interest is in the level of proof because as an expression, you know, the botanicals come through and in an interesting way at that proof. And, you know, the control is in the hand of the consumer, how much you choose to dilute it, whether mixing it or, you know, putting a few splashes of water in it. I mean, Maker's Mark is not like the sipping bourbon, as we all know, but whatever. But
on, even on more the, to that point then of like having to know what you're working with as an ingredient.
But as a, on the mass consumer scale, like I read this Gizmodo article about why, you know, the Maker's Mark scandal doesn't really matter because you always mix it with whatever, you know, soda water, whatever it may be, which is not how I prefer to take my whiskey, of course, because I'm not a fucking amateur, but,
we would drop a mic, but one's already broken.
Yeah. But you know, they all talk about the comments were all in this vein of like why they were upset was because they felt like they were paying the same amount for less product. The idea being that it wouldn't get them drunk enough at, you know, 3% less alcohol.
Right.
Or whatever it was, which to me is just like so sort of horrifying. I guess because I have a different perspective. Like I don't, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is an unpopular thing. I mean, I certainly get drunk. I love it, you know, love to just party, but like that's not really like my end game.
I definitely think that that's like a total just like voting with your pocketbook type of notion that people, it's like, I'm going to pay the same amount of money to get less drunk. Like people do feel that way.
But that's ridiculous. Like it is, to get it less is, drunk. Like,
it is, not just a, but it is, so it is amateur. To you.
Yeah.
It is to you.
It is to me.
But I think the majority of people who might not necessarily spend their time in like the free booze, free food world as much as we do.
Let's be honest. Like the majority of people who buy Maker's Mark are probably people who like want a little bit nicer of a whiskey, but aren't really going after Johnny Walker's or Jameson's or... No, I took that back.
Wait, yeah, Jameson, I mean, that's the middle of the road whiskey camp.
Right there. They're drinking. Yeah. That's what they're drinking. Like, to them, it's the Maker's Mark. It's the Jameson's. Yeah. It's the Johnny Walker's. Like, that's their high end.
There's nothing wrong with Maker's Mark. It's a consistent product.
I really think it is that people just didn't want to pay the same amount to get less. Yeah, and so, I think that's a valid... argument.
Yeah, but, I mean, I suppose, I mean, maybe it's just like,
it's not the same way that we look at it.
Unforgivably naive to be like, well, what do you talk? Like, it's not like money equals drunkenness. It's you're drinking for pleasure. I don't drink for drunkenness. It just,
I think it's a different type of mindset.
Also, I mean, if you just break it down, it's like, you're going to charge me the same for less.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they reversed it. We can all get as drunk as we want.
Huzzah. Huzzah. Okay. So that's really probably the most modern, up-to-date. I mean, that was the story that's happening today.
We can't even say it's a trend. That's trending. So it's probably trending. For those of you who don't remember.
Hashtag Maker's Mark?
Probably. Anyway, so for those of you who didn't get a chance to.
There's this new thing called Twitter. Do we have time to talk about? Okay.
So for those of you who didn't listen to Jordana's episode last year, now would be the time to press pause in this podcast.
Pause.
And go back and listen to episode 103 of Snacky Tunes, where we talked about a number of trends, visited 2011 predictions.
Hey, just an update before you pause. Greg still works for the Ace Hotel.
Oh, good.
Because I just want everyone to know.
Let's talk about the era of the Ace Hotel. One of your predictions from last year was the Nomad explosion.
Right, that's right.
And the rumor at that time was Russ and Daughters was moving up there.
That was a rumor.
Did not happen.
It did not happen.
So, yet. Nomad explosion.
Hold on, what was the pause?
What?
Is it going to happen?
I don't think so. But, you know, they were talking about it. It was a real conversation.
It was enough that we had, like, the candor in our voices made me believe this might happen. We believed it at the time.
And I don't think it was a false belief. I think it was something that was in conversation that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But the Nomad did explode. It exploded all over everyone's face. And
the area or the restaurant?
The two are inextricably intertwined.
Hold on. Okay. Finish your thought.
Well, I mean, do you disagree that the restaurant called the Nomad, located north of Madison Park, is not part of the Nomad
explosion? My question is that, you know, the Nomad really hit, because then at that time we were talking about,
who's going to pay? And I think we joked about like a $30 burger,
right?
Let alone a $78 chicken,
right?
Which the answer is everyone,
right? God bless that chicken,
which I've still never had.
It's quite good.
Yeah,
it's quite good. I mean, listen, the Nomad is, you know, was obviously the opening of this year, you know, on the high end that everyone was talking about. Mission Chinese probably on the lower end, although I don't really think consider it low end food, but you know, as far as the spectrum goes, Nomad was is a wonderful restaurant in, you know, the robber baron New York mold. I mean, it's a classic space. There's something utterly transporting about it. In particular, you know, I'm totally romanced by the bar program there. I think that's really just historic and just feels
lovely. Do they serve Maker's Mark?
You know, I'm probably.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
They have some prohibition like statutes in place in case they're like, well, we've got the real Maker's Mark just hidden away in the floorboards in case shit went down.
No, but I know the Nomad exploded at the restaurant.
Yeah.
My question is, did the area around it also explode?
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So
I would hope so. That's why you're here, right?
So do I. So north of Madison. So I'm thinking right now about the new Milk and Honey, which is right around Madison Park. I'm not sure it's north of Madison Park.
I mean, that was in the same breath last year that we talked about Milk and Honey.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's just talk about that area in general. Like, let's say anything above Italy.
Okay, let's say the new neighborhood.
But just that area where it's like, you know, walking around there, still like a lot of halal shops.
Yeah.
Chandri moved upstairs. They expanded. I love that place. That Cabihan across the street from the Ace.
Is that what that is?
It's amazing.
Do you eat there because the Breslin's too expensive?
I eat there because you can get a veggie, a meat, fresh naan and salad for $7.
Yeah, when I stayed at the Ace last year, I ate across the street quite a bit because I couldn't afford the Breslin.
Well, so that area is, I think it's still ascendant. I definitely think, I mean, Italy, you know, you make a good point. I think it had a lot to do with that and just sort of bringing a new gastronomic gravitas to that particular area. I'll also say another neighborhood that's sort of ascendant right now, I'm a little mortified to say it, Murray Hill is kind of happening right now.
Who just moved there?
Oh, who moved there, to live? I don't want to be friends with them anymore.
I can't remember. There was a restaurant that moved there.
Well, there's the Ken Friedman, April Bloomfield Salvation Taco Project, which is happening. There is, which is open. There's Middle Branch, which is another sort of...
That's what it is.
Sasha Petrosky, you know, House of Petrosky kind of spinoff of Little Branch down in the West Village. So there's something happening
I had a friend that moved to 40th and
Sutton. There's Cannibal, and which is the extension on Resto, which is an exceptional restaurant.
I absolutely love the Cannibal.
One of the best steaks I've had recently, I have to say. Just phenomenal.
I actually don't... I mean, I guess I understand why it's not more popular, because, you know, Resto's right there. Like, Cannibal is really... It's like visceral meat, like beer, intense thing. Like, you're not going there for a date.
No, I would totally go there for a date.
I know you would.
Bring me a man that can take me to eat a fucking pig's head on a date, and I'm a happy girl.
You got two sitting right in front of you.
You want to go on a date with me?
Yes. And I know your boyfriend, and you know my girlfriend.
Three if you count me back here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We actually spoke extensively about whether the first time that I met Darren, it was a date or not.
It was a friend date.
But we did discuss whether or not.
I think New York has a very steady, even though they have like that whole anti-dating thing.
Yeah.
Friend dates are very real in New York.
Well, you set us up. It was the best shidduch of all time.
It was so good, right?
It was really good.
A missed email. You want to tell a quick story? Origin story?
Okay.
So you just find us at a party.
So we can say that the Nomad and that Murray Hill, it's we're still midway. Some things didn't work out, but there are moves making in that are like...
Isn't that the best, like organic growth over time?
Yeah.
And what was I just reading that... Oh, Kaijitsu just moved to Murray Hill.
Did it?
Yeah, just...
That's what it is, right?
Yeah, Kaijitsu left Lower East Side and just moved to Murray Hill.
Oh.
That's huge.
That's a big one.
And they're expanding their lunch service.
That's interesting.
That's really, really...
Yeah.
That's a big one.
And it's interesting, too, because why Murray Hill? You know, like, there's things that I understand...
Cheap.
You think it's cheap?
Cheaper.
I think that there's...
It's the built-in clientele is not traditionally what those particular restaurateurs would be going for.
Yeah, you have to also know that...
Those people are going to go to those restaurants that open because there's nothing there.
But also in that area, Spin, just Buzz Media is up there. We're up there. There's a ton of hotels that just opened up in that area as well.
No, we're talking about Murray Hill.
I mean, the Ace is a hop, skip, and a jump from Murray Hill. I mean, it's not that far.
Is that the new slogan for the Ace?
A hop, no, skip, and a jump from Murray Hill. Come to New York. We're a hop, skip, and a jump from Murray Hill. But I'm saying in that general area that you could find like high end restaurants. I mean, in the 30s, like there's just not that many good places. Unless
you know how it is, especially for the crowd that lives there.
Yeah,
is like. That, you know, especially in New York, if you're not like a destination diner going out, you go out at night or you eat within like a 6-block radius.
Well, and even if you are a destination diner, yeah. I mean, the restaurants I go to the most are in my neighborhood.
Exactly.
Mile End, Buttermilk Channel, Prime Meats, Frankie's.
You live in such a good neighborhood. I've never been there.
Lucali?
I know.
If I wasn't on a detox, we would go tomorrow. Tomorrow.
After the show.
After the show. Pizza round one. So, all right. So, Nomad, still on the rise. Murray Hill, one to watch out. What else do we talk about
We talked about coffee, but we can just say coffee's great.
Coffee happened.
The fact that Cafe Grumpy is one of the settings for season 2 of Girls.
You know, I don't think they go to enough restaurants on Girls. I feel like they're missing that particular.
But do you remember when you were 24? This is what I ate when I was 24.
Like bodega sandwiches.
I ate bodega sandwiches, and I used to go to the bagel shop. I used to wait till I was really hungry, because I had no money. Go to the bagel shop, I'd eat the all-in-one, which was an everything bagel. Hash brown, 2 slices of bacon, 2 eggs, and cheese for $4.50, and that's all I would eat.
Really? I worked at Time Out when I was 24, so I ate like foie gras. And
Again. I mean, I drank a lot of free alcohol when I was 24. So, but like as far as food went, like I think it's very appropriate that those girls do not eat in restaurants.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And okay. That, yeah.
I mean, I can see that.
And that they're at art openings drinking shitty wine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that follows.
Yeah.
That works.
But if one of them happened to become a food critic on the show and they went to restaurants, I would raise my ire.
I'm happy to do a cameo.
So we talked about coffee, but let's talk about Lucky Peach.
Yes.
Because that was kind of, the first issue had just come out, but now we're a year in.
Yeah.
Episode 6 is coming, issue 6. Jamie's got an article in it.
I know.
Congrats.
Honey. Gathering Honey.
She is my honey. Look at
the story that Jamie Feldmar wrote in Lucky Peach is about gathering honey in the event of an apocalypse, and it has nothing to do with the fact that Darren is dating her. Moving on.
Just talk about it. I mean, you know, let's expand on your thoughts. Of that.
I mean, I think that the magazine, the quarterly, has matured beautifully. I'm really impressed with it. I think that, you know, they've managed to keep it really fresh and interesting with each new thematic issue. I think they're working with writers who I really respect. I think that energy wise, it hasn't flagged in a year. And, you know, I continue to think that that's where publishing is going. You know, proprietary publishing, people sort of creative people converging on.
Is it sustainable?
Media.
Like, I mean,
I don't know what it looks like on the inside. I couldn't say.
But I think there hasn't been any copycats since then. There hasn't been another.
Yeah, but you're talking 18 writers with some of the top restaurateurs pulling together like all their friends to do a project. People could try to recreate it, but they would I'm already writing for Lucky Peach.
But I'm saying if you're saying that's the future.
Yeah.
There hasn't been another.
Well, I mean, these things happen slowly. I mean, I definitely think that. I mean, there have been others, actually. There are other beautiful quarterlies. There's like Swallow, which I think is the greatest food magazine name ever.
I love James. That takes. It's not even a quarterly. It's like.
I think it's actually online. Swallow, isn't it?
Gather's good. Beautiful photos.
Wilder Quarterly, which is called Wilder Quarterly.
Yeah.
Which is all just like more like high end gardening, but it's like very. But again, like those are beautiful niche areas, which I would agree with you. Like they're getting the best. Like, I don't recognize any of the people from Quarter Wildly, but I do know that like when you start digging, no pun intended, that you do find the best.
Pun intended.
I mean, this is what
that comes up is nutrient.
Is it sustainable? I mean, I think that, you know, Lucky Peach has managed to also position itself as a place where writers really want to be, and I think that's, you know, that's, there's a real value there to cultivating the sense that as a writer in New York working in this particular thematic zone, you want to be associated with that publication. And that means that, you know, from a logistical standpoint, you can kind of like write your own ticket as to like what you pay your writers and things like that. But you know, I continue to be really impressed with it.
Can I ask you now, as a freelancer, are you more, how do you feel about that?
I mean, it's been amazing. It's been, you know, it's still somewhat new. I mean, I just stopped working at Time Out in October, but, you know, I have been, it's funny, like someone just told me that since I started freelancing, they called it Jordana Unchained, which I think was a little, it felt maybe a little inappropriate. I'm not sure, but also funny. I don't know. But that I've just been writing these really personal sort of things, even if it's not like a personal topic, but just sort of bringing my own voice, which I think is fairly unique and, you know, filled with expletives and dick jokes and all of that. And, you know, I think that I've really enjoyed finding that place. You know, I obviously know a lot about food. I also, you know, have a very distinctive personality. And I think it's been a real pleasure for me to kind of find a way to bring that to the fore, I guess. So I've been really enjoying it.
Speaking of finding voice, one of the things, and this will be the last one we covered from last year's episode, was talking about Pete Wells. Because he had just really started.
Really? Just a year ago?
I mean, it was kind of like that transition time over, like, where Sam Sifton was still in the... was still in there, but... Has he found his voice? Because you had said, give the guy some time. Has he found his voice in last year?
I'm a huge fan of Pete. I mean, you know, I'm not one of those people who become sort of like whipped into a frenzy whenever there's a new New York Times restaurant critic. I think that Pete, just as Sifton did, has been adaptable with the changing mores in food. And he's been flexible in terms of the kind of conversations, well, what we talk about when we talk about food now. I think Pete is pretty good at... putting himself in there.
I like him better, that's for sure.
Than Sifton? Yeah.
I mean, you liked him before he even started better than Sifton.
I
enjoy him. I think he's funny. I think he's smart. You know, does my opinion always align with his? Not necessarily, but like, how interesting is that? You know, if you always feel exactly the same way. I mean,
he's a real yes man when it comes to reviewing restaurants of, yeah.
What?
What? Was that a joke?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, like, we should probably talk about Guy's American Kitchen or whatever it's called, American Truck Stop.
You want to go first?
American Whorehouse.
Have you eaten there?
Of course I've eaten there. I ate there, like, the first week that it was open.
Okay.
Here's the only thing I have to say about the review. I wish he had written it like a real review.
Mm.
Like, I think it just adds to the whole thing. And the whole controversy by making it unlike any other review.
I don't know about that. I mean, there's lots of restaurant reviews in the past that I can't think of right now that have been sort of free form in their own way. And
that's his only one in the Times.
Maybe it's his only one.
For
but
now.
There's a tradition of that kind of whimsical writing in the Times. And more than that, whatever. I won't even argue the format because that's its own thing. But I just found the whole thing, you know. Wonderful. I mean, I happened to see Pete that week right after the review came out, and he was, you know, it was just, I think it was a bewildering week. The fact that there was such a, I think it really spoke to the kind of like notion of like a class division in conversations around food right now, because all these morning shows were bringing Guy Fieri on like he was some like wounded little ferret that like, you know, was like somehow just like,
I just said like the lower third wounded ferret restaurateur like, Guy Fieri,
you know, clutching his, you know, his petticoats and talking about how his feelings were hurt because the New York Times reviewer picked on him.
Guy Fieri has to know that he has like dumbed down American cuisine for people.
I don't think Guy Fieri cares. I think...
And I don't think that's true either. I don't think he's dumbed down.
California egg roll? Like, he made that.
Oh, fuck that. There's fuck a pastrami that. Egg roll on the menu at Red Farm. I mean,
but
like,
I'm
going to
say, but that's... No, you don't think that's elevated?
No, I don't think it's dumbing
or
down.
Or that's dumbing it down?
How that? He's not... First of all, let's just get a few things straight about Guy Fieri. First thing is
his
show, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, is a fantastic show. That show...
Agreed.
The show, the entire idea of that show as celebrating like regional American restaurants and the people who are behind them is a fantastic idea, and I love the idea. And if it was hosted by anybody else, I would probably watch it all the time.
Hold on a second. Before we go down this path of like defending Guy Fieri,
mm-hmm.
I agree with all what you're about to say, the logic mm-hmm. of everything he does. But him trying to pretend that he's not just like putting out schlock on a plate.
I don't think that's what he's trying to pretend. This is what I think. This is what I think about guys. First of all, yes, of course I went there. I went there the first week that it opened. I was totally fascinated to see. It was a cultural phenom. You have to be there. I didn't go because I thought the food would be great. In fact, I went with very realistic expectations about what I was going to get. And mind you, I am not an elitist when it comes to food. Like, no. I really am not. I mean, I can talk a big game, but I can slum it, you know, with the best of them.
I like bowl noodles from like a crappy place at 5 a.m.
And I have, I grew up in the suburbs. Like the restaurants that I grew up going to were chain restaurants. Like I went to those places. Yeah. I have a...
Wait, but now that you're in the city, you're Jordana Unchained.
Boom! Ow, that was way too hard. That was way too hard. So, so I, you know, went in with this expectation that we'd be eating like nachos and, you know, like some kind of chicken tender and some sort of sauce and whatever. Exactly. And you know what? Like, I got in that frame of mind and I was like, let's do this. Give me my fishbowl full of blue liquor and give me my nachos and give me my, like, hamburger that I'm gonna like rub all over my face.
Palafita
and just like
a burger,
you know, I'm just gonna, like, give this to me. Even on its own terms, guys, is an absolute failure. And that is what's egregious about that restaurant. That's the offense.
That is it.
Doesn't even deliver its obscene pleasures that are promised on that menu, and that's where I'm offended.
And that's where I agree as well, is that it's... No one's going there expecting fine dining, but if you're gonna do chicken fingers, like, do them really well. And especially since...
Do them greasy, and I mean, they're just... read this menu and you expect to get these, like, just absurd, huge portions of, you know, incredibly just, like, you know, just a fat ass wiggling in your face and tempting you with all of its, like, oleaginous beauty. Like, you just, like, want this... You know, it promises this world of excess, and what you get is actually this, like, restrained, wan, boring, castrated, tepid food. And, you know, I have no patience for that.
All right. Excuse me, sir. I ordered this burger medium castrated, and it looks well castrated.
All right. Well, let's get a rundown of your favorite restaurants.
Yeah.
We'll play a song, and then we'll talk 2013.
Favorite restaurants what?
From 2012.
Right. Thank you. So, my favorite restaurants from 2012. A few of them are actually kind of recent, like Chez Sardine, which just opened. I've been really impressed with Chez Sardine.
You're the second person who mentioned that. Yeah,
where's it located?
2 days.
In the West Village. It's right around the corner from Empeyon. It's a tiny little restaurant, so you're going to have to...
By the way, Stupak was on the show a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, he's...
First time I ever heard about him was from you, like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
He's a star.
We went there together.
Oh, we did. We went to Cocina together. That's right.
He says you two have a deep friendship.
We have a deep friendship.
He said that about us?
No.
Oh.
And so much so that when I discovered Emoji yesterday, I sent him, like, I'm going to say between 30 and 40 successive emoji texts, which he answered in kind. So he's in love with me, obviously. So Chez Sardine, right around the corner from the Taqueria, Empeyon Taqueria, in the West Village. So, and Chez Sardine is so small, I really think that, you know, you got to kind of... put your name down, go to Cocina, or rather Taqueria, have some drinks, and then go and have your meal at Chez
It's like
Sardine.
A sardine cannon here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, there's like this great portrait of Mr. Miyagi on the wall, and there's like, it's a sushi restaurant, sort of izakaya as well, food, but it's really doesn't like fall into any one particular like culinary agenda.
Who's the chef?
It's Mehdi, I think it's Brunette. Or Brunei Brinkley from Fedora as well. Okay. And he's just, you know, he's a Montreal chef, cut his teeth at Au Pied de Cochon. He is sort of has that like demented, you know, Quebecois perspective on food, and it comes through at Chez Sardine really beautifully.
Which is a cool name as well.
Mehdi?
No, Chez Sardine.
Yeah, it's a cool name. That helps.
Sardine House.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. I know that you understand French perfectly, Greg. Oh, my God. All right, what else? What do you got?
Okay, so then there's the Pines.
Which we ate at on Saturday.
Did you?
Former Roberta's chef.
Former Maston Lake chef.
That's right. Well, that's funny because I think about him as Maston Lake, too. So Angelo is, he was the chef at this restaurant, Maston Lake, which was sort of short-lived in Williamsburg. I thought...
7 months.
7 months. I thought it was a really excellent restaurant. I think there were some logistical problems there, you know, which we don't have to get into, but, I, you know,
whatever
it was.
And a little out of place. Maybe a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah, just...
it just, and also, you know, the, just the way that built that was built, you know, you walk by and the bar is in the front, so it never looks like it's full. You know, there's just like little things, just, I think, it,
Bedford,
that were wrong.
Bedford Avenue was not the right place for that.
But the food was exceptional.
And the
plating
was crazy.
So much so that, in fact, when I was still at Time Out, we nominated it for a food and drink award, and then it closed before the nominations were even, rather the voting period
did
was done.
Did you give it a special, like, post-Lewis award?
No, we did not do that.
Months.
But we actually did in the past. We used to do like in memoriam for closed restaurants, but we didn't do that this year. But you know, he surfaced at the Pines, which, you know, this is from the same people who do Little Neck, also in Gowanus. Gowanus is really happening right now. Yeah, I mean, Little Neck, there's some really great food at Little Neck. I think if I were to choose, I'd probably find myself at the Pines. I've had some wonderful dishes there. I mean, really exciting food coming out of that kitchen.
We had, I mean, well, they killed us, but the pork shoulder was insane, and the steak was great.
I mean, he's just, you know, he's it's just a perfect sous vide texture.
Yeah,
foie just gras really was amazing.
He does those filones, you know, this the beautiful heels of bread he just he brought out to our table with like just shaved truffle all over it, and just it just. It's totally unexpected, you know, talk about sort of out of place in that neighborhood. I mean, it's an industrial neighborhood without anything like that
but
going on.
But it feels like, first off, it was packed.
Yeah.
Saturday night. I mean, it was like, it was packed. But for some reason, I feel like it's a better fit out there than it was on Bedford Avenue. I feel like...
Choices, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's a destination dining place. And
yeah.
So, like, make it a destination.
Yeah.
It's, the whole thing is... You know, you're taking a cab, it's in Gowanus, you go, where are we? And then it's this gem in the middle of a dark block,
mm-hmm.
and it's just so much warmth, and it just adds to the experience, because there's something else there. Well, there's something across the street, but...
And then, yeah, so there's that, and actually that whole neighborhood, there's a lot going on in that neighborhood. I still have more eating to do out there, but...
What else is on your list for out there?
Runner and Stone, which is this new bakery that's out there I'd really like to check out, and they're also doing... dinner like in the second floor dining room, which it sounds really interesting. I'd like to check it out. And then there's, I think it's called Fletcher's
the barbecue place,
and I did check that out and I did enjoy it. I was they did an amazing pulled pork, like really a benchmark pulled pork. That was my favorite
really
thing there were other things that I think, you know, could be workshopped a little bit more, but the pulled pork to me was pretty perfect.
God,
so there's
New York
that.
Barbecue is really just, you want to talk about a trend.
It's funny, there's been real sort of moments of explosion in barbecue. Like, I remember, you know, when Hill Country first opened, that was like the first sort of wave of
well, I mean, there's the always
Texas
been
style barbecue.
Yeah. And now you have Fletcher's, Mighty Quinn's,
mm-hmm.
Brisket Town.
Brisket Town, yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Brisket Town represents a whole other kind of thing of the sort of like, I won't say crowd-funded, but, you know, kind of bootstrap restaurant.
It is totally crowd-funded.
Yeah, it is crowd-funded,
I mean, that's the beauty of that restaurant. And I also love the fact that they do that. They took, like, the Franklin's model. It's like, you know, what we have is what we have.
Yeah.
So it's like every day is a sellout. Like, from a press standpoint, that's huge. And it also creates this, like, unbelievable type of panic in New Yorkers where it's like, we have to go. It's going to sell out. We have to go and go get brisket. And just, it's a good business model.
Yeah. It's funny because I actually have not tasted his brisket yet. And funnily enough, he actually, Daniel Delaney lives next door to some very good friends of mine in Williamsburg. And I just happened one night to end up at a crawfish boil that he was throwing, having no idea who he was. This is before Brisket Town happened. And, you know, he told me he was working on this, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool. You know, I had a hard time like wrapping my head around exactly how it would work. But anyway, he proceeded to have those parties, you know, before Brisket Town opened,
right, yeah,
with Brisket Labs, where people would come to his home and eat this brisket. And I was at my friend's house a number of times when this was going on. I'd be like, can I taste the brisket? And he'd be like, it's not perfect today. You can't taste it. So he withheld meat from me, and you know how I get. Oh, you know how I get.
Phrasing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one last restaurant that you loved, and then we'll kind of close it out in 2012.
We have to talk about Mission Chinese.
Let's
talk about Mission Chinese.
Let's start with the owner, who is hands down one of the nicest dudes ever.
So nice.
Consistently nice. It's awesome to see his face on the Uniqlo ads on buses.
And he's there at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Which is also amazing. And then when he's not there, he's at other people's restaurants. Like, he's out.
He's supportive of the community.
And the fact, I mean, there's so many things that's like from like that I think is right. It's like the free keg,
mm-hmm.
which is just, I went opening night, and I was like, oh, cool, free keg opening night. And then just to know, like, that's just a thing. That's such a nice way to deal with the fact that, like, I went a few weeks ago on a Monday, and it was a 2-hour wait at 9 p.m. And I was like, well, we just got it to go. But I was like, this is legitimately insane. Staff is nice. The kitchen's great. And takeout, I actually think, is the unsung hero of that place.
Well, and by the way, they take reservations. I feel like no one ever talks about this. They do.
They do, but it's like an email a week in advance.
And? I mean, this is the same food community that fucking lined up for Co. 2 weeks in advance at 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, they take reservations.
Are you yelling at me?
I'm yelling at you.
Yeah. Well, you're wrong. And reservations actually...
I mean, the general tenor of all of these interviews is you say things, and then I tell you how you're wrong about it.
Yeah. And by the way, let's not forget that reservations
is that
is
what's
not
going on?
Reservations, it's not like... I mean, granted, because New Yorkers want things when they want it now. It's like, and they get demands, but like, you can eat almost anywhere as long as you're willing to be patient.
Yeah. No.
No, okay.
Well, you can't eat at Blanca if you're willing to be patient.
I've already eaten there.
Great.
Moment of silence for Darren.
Yeah, Darren. congratulations. Okay, but let's focus on the real stuff.
No, let's talk about Mission China. So a few things. I mean, you made a wonderful point when you said that, you know, you talked about his support of the community. I think that, you know, beyond him, actually, you're totally right. He goes out into the community. He eats at these other restaurants. He tweets about them. He makes his face seen in the world, which I think is very valuable. He also, you know, donates a percentage of all of his large plates to, I think, Food Bank, right?
Yeah, it's like 75 cents.
Which is such a beautiful gesture, something it's that's
amazing.
So simple that
especially
which is a it's a meaningful gesture for a new restaurant. That's a large sum
of
money.
And that's on razor thin profits.
I mean, it's
and
it's
price, his prices are cheap. I mean, for like the food for the amount of food that you get for what you're paying
or aren't cheap.
No, it's cheap.
You said aren't
it's reasonable.
Cheap.
It's reasonable. Yeah.
Reasonable. But I think for what you're getting and for the amount of food that you get, I think it's
I mean, listen, and you know, and that's just a beautiful thing. I think other restaurants, you know, would be wise to sort of pay attention to that model because, you know, I mean, look at what happened after Sandy. I mean, you know, there's not really this like sort of quantified space for giving inside the restaurant community. And I think that, you know, Danny is really leading the charge in that. And beyond all of those wonderful things, it's just a great restaurant.
I mean, the food
is amazing.
I mean, it's just a great restaurant.
We should go there tonight.
The food is interesting and challenging. The environment strikes just that right note of just like downtown, minimalist, cool, you know, and the service is, you know, as warm as it needs to be without being, you know, doting. It's efficient. It's, you know, it's just a wonderful place.
And
let's
just say, seriously, like the takeout, you can get it in 15 minutes. It's my only regret of not having more friends in Lower East Side that I don't have anywhere to take it to eat.
I have no regrets on that front.
I mean, it would still be...
Biggest regret of 2012.
If you got it to go and you hopped in a cab, it would still be warm by the time you got back to our apartment.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's great. Anyway, all right, so let's play a song.
Can we just touch on one more thing with Mission Chinese food?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Is that, and this is based on what we talked about last year, that both that and Pok Pok are like two of the few very successful transplant restaurants.
Yeah, the interloper effect. Yeah.
Which is really crazy that those two, I mean, the fact that Mission Chinese food sat at the top of almost every critic's list, pretty much at the number one spot, it's got to be a little infuriating to New Yorkers, but it also speaks well to, you know, sings the praises of what he's doing and how amazing it is.
Okay. By the way, the Pok Pok like on Lower East Side, the Pad Thai is so good.
Listen, that Pad Thai is so good. It is such an uncomfortable place to eat it. Christ.
Yeah.
It is like, it is just, I went there for dinner with three people and I was like, we don't exist to each other.
But
our backs are just.
Well, when I ate there was like in between like finishing something and going to a movie. So it was perfect.
That's perfect.
But not like a dinner type thing. But that Pad Thai is.
It's so good.
It's so good. And the crepe is also fantastic.
And I also like really go in on those psalms. Like give a lady like a vinegary, non-alcoholic drink and she's just like down for anything.
Yeah. I mean, that was.
Oysters and psalms.
Yeah. You know? Okay. All right. Let's play a tune.
Okay. This is just an oldie but goodie here on Snacky Tunes. We'll be right back.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
This guy won't look over. He fucking refuses to do it.
Oh, welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
We're like second-class citizens in here, by the way. It's like people, like, they kind of, like, kind of look at us and they can't figure it out, so they just turn their backs on us.
We are, have the lovely, well-coiffed Jordana Rothman.
Independent food writer.
Independent.
Lady at large.
Lady at large. Jordana Unchained.
Jordana, is it Ordana, the J is silent?
You know, I lived in Spain when I was in high school, and they called me Hordana, and I hated it, so let's not go back there.
Are you serious?
They did, or Hordy.
Was that because of, soft J?
Soft J, not because of my behavior. What the hell?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose
you
that was
your set him up for, like...
Well, if that was your behavior, there wouldn't be too many soft J's, if you know what I mean.
Wow. So, one of the...
You good? I'm good. So, okay. 2012 has passed, and 2013 is here to stay for at least 10 more months.
And one of the things that I feel has been a trend last year that is really kind of kicking up this year, and started probably with the Lucky Peach issue, is ramen.
That's right.
And April Bloomfield did a huge ramen breakdown.
Where is her restaurant located? Which one?
It was last year, because she did it with Ivan from Ivan's Ramen. They did like a huge like 8-course. They broke down a pig and then used the pig and made his ramen. And he is coming to the city.
We were lucky enough to get a preview at Momofuku this last year.
That's right. Darren and I went last year when Ivan came to town and made triple garlic mazaman. That's what I remember. The triple garlic, amazing. Which was pretty spectacular. And then there was a cold ramen and sort of market ramen.
But most importantly, the fervor.
Oh my God. It was insane. I mean, there were hundreds of people.
It started at 5. They were out by... No, started at 5:30. They're out by 7. I mean, there was hundreds of people.
Because you know what, stampedes.
You know what it was? They're probably like, oh, everyone's going to come in and order like a normal person and just order like a ramen. But no, everyone's like, well, I'm going to order 9 ramens.
Yeah.
I think we ordered 4 between the 3 of us.
We ordered everything on the menu.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Don't try to play it. Like, I think we showed restraint. You showed no restraint.
No.
I mean, of course, that's what we did. We had to taste everything.
Of course. And the Dasara guys were there. And have you been to Dasara?
I have been to Dasara. Very nice.
I think it's really great. They have a great brunch. They do this miso praline bacon.
Oh, God. Come on.
It's delicious.
I don't eat brunch.
You don't eat brunch?
One of my Jordana Unchained diatribes was about how much I hate brunch. It was entitled The Complete Guide to Hating Brunch, and it was on firstwefeast.com.
First off, firstwefeast.com. Chris Mazel Tov.
Chris Schoenberger.
He's crushing it.
He's so great.
He's so great.
I want to know why you don't like brunch. I mean, I have my own reasons, but...
I mean, should we get down to it? Because I have a lot to say on the matter.
Let's get to it. What about ramen? Ramen's here to stay. We're not going to say anything new about it.
Okay.
This is why brunch sucks.
Okay, well, first of all, I need to give snaps to First Wave Feast and Chris Schoenberger for giving me a platform to say such hateful things.
You're a mensch, and you've created a bigger one.
And I'll also tell you that that in the fallout to my writing this story has been remarkable. I can't even tell you the vitriol that I've absorbed from people who love brunch. You know, just they're incredible brunch loyalists, and the idea that anyone could say anything negative about brunch is just horrifying to them. And
so you attacked a New York institution. I believe that when a certain crew or group of people move to New York, part of their fantasies that like that Sunday hungover brunch with the girls, hanging out, like we're drinking mimosas.
So let's be clear. I have no problem with eating food at that time of day on a weekend. In fact, like that often winds up being the de facto thing that you have to do because you wake up late because maybe you're hungover or whatever. Anyway, point being, there's so much to hate about brunch. I don't really think that we can contain it inside, that my hate can be contained inside the Heritage
headquarters.
But I'll tell you that there's a lot of things to it. First of all, I think that it brings out the worst in your favorite restaurants. I think that you go to a restaurant that has like a really distinct identity at night. They really work hard to to extract that identity, to find new ways to express and refract that identity. And then at brunch, it's just, you know, brioche French toast and pancakes with maybe some kind of like little, you know, like international flair if it's like a Caribbean restaurant or whatever restaurant. So Eggs Benedict, whatever. It's a hegemonic brunch canon,
but
that I feel is just, it's got a stranglehold on the way people eat on the weekend. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing is,
oh man, I think we unleashed something.
The second thing is just the entire sort of ritualistic quality to it is a real problem for me. The first, like the waiting on the lines, the drinking of the crap mimosas, which are total bullshit, and you're courting a hangover because it's just cheap sparkling wine and from concentrate orange juice, and it's just disgusting, and it's just a sugar mom. You're just going to feel terrible later in the day. The crowd of just the most heinous people in New York who spent Saturday night terrorizing bartenders in the meatpacking district, and now they've found their way to brunch and they're wearing headscarves and big sunglasses to conceal themselves.
You say this while wearing a headscarf, though.
I'm not wearing sunglasses, so.
Fair enough.
And also, mine is tied in a Rosie the Riveter like.
Okay.
Swirl.
Can we find one place that mm-hmm. actually does brunch within the thesis or theme of their restaurant that doesn't like stray away?
Yeah, dim sum. Boom. Done.
Desara does a good one too.
Desara, I'm sorry. Desara is a lovely restaurant. It's in my neighborhood. Josh is lovely. Kathy is lovely. The whole place is lovely. Brunch is bullshit. There is no good brunch. Brunch is bullshit.
Okay.
Give me breakfast or give me lunch,
but don't give me brunch.
or give me death.
What about M. Wells Dinette?
Well, I haven't been there for brunch, but even, I mean, I don't do brunch is what I'm trying to tell you.
What happens if I want to eat with you on the weekend around 1 o'clock?
Then have lunch with me. Have dinner with me.
I said 1 o'clock.
Have dim sum with me. Go to Sunset Park and eat tacos with me.
What happens if we're...
Go to Flushing and eat tacos with me.
What happens if we're in Chelsea at 1 o'clock?
Darren.
No brunch. No brunch.
Okay. Just pick it up. MC Todd in the house.
Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. So, all right. So, moving on. So, let's talk about...
Return to France.
That's not where I was going to go, but sure, let's do Return of France first.
Yeah. Well,
say bonjour à française.
Oh my God. Because when I think like about my fantasies Snippy of today, dining Craig. In New York, originally mm-hmm. it was like high-end French restaurants.
Escoffier.
Like, that's like what I thought. Like when Darren's like, I'm really getting the food, and I'm just like, dude, I don't really know if I know French food that well. I don't really know if like I'm
Hold on. Is that what you really thought about
when you were saying it, I was like, man, is he like...
Is he eating snails?
Yeah.
Is he eating... I don't know. I talked to my brothers in New York, and he's eating snails.
Yeah.
Guys.
Yeah.
French onion soup.
French onion soup, snails, and like tartare. I mean, that's what I thought about like originally my misconcept of what... Eating in New York.
That being said, I would eat all of that stuff right now.
I mean, you know, listen, there's been a, you know, the last 20 years, you know, have been really transformative for food, especially in New York, but really just in the country at large. And we've really, even over the last 30 years, put a lot of emphasis on identifying and developing our native cuisine, which I think is something that it was really important for us to do as a country and as a culture. And, you know, names, you know, that come to mind are, you know, Larry Forgione and Alice Waters and Peter Hoffman and, you know, James Beard. Julia Child, not so
terrible
much as far
example.
As, yeah, it's not, terrible. Not a great example.
Did
but
she like, did she like French cooking?
Okay, enough with you. But for a long time, I think, you know, fine dining restaurants, fine dining chefs, they, you know, they chased France. This is nothing new. This is a classic conversation, but they chased France. What it meant to eat well, to eat, you know, in a fine dining setting was to eat classical French food. And there were very few variations of that. And if there were, you know, there were sort of like, also very Western European.
And when you say classically trained, you immediately think, oh, they're trained in the French school of cooking.
Yes. I mean, and even if you're talking about American cuisine, I mean, anyone who picks up a knife is indebted to the French because, you know, I mean, they quantified cooking. So that being said, you know, over the last few years, we've lost our, you know, old French dinosaurs and we've lost our, you know, we have Le Grand Oui, but we've lost, you know, Pavillon. We've lost like all of those, you know, classic old school French places, even, you know, Le Cirque is a dinosaur. And it also became unfashionable, right? Like we sort of evolved past it. There's no more tablecloths, no more, it's more democratic now. You know, we have our own native cuisine and all of that. And I think that food, like anything else, is a pendulum. And, you know, sometimes it swings in a casual direction and sometimes it swings, you know, back in a more formal direction. And I don't necessarily think that we're headed towards a revival of like white tablecloth classic French food, but I do think that there is evidence of a resurgence and an interest in French food, and that it's actually going to be really exciting because we're coming at it from a very different place, right? We're not chasing France anymore. No. We're interested in French cuisine as, you know, another international culture to explore through its food.
It's probably going to be something like the Torisi revitalization of the Checker red sauce, where it's exciting. They're taking what everyone loves about French food, but making it their own, and not better, but just different. I mean, even if you looked at Paris, like Chateaubriand, like there is a changing of the guard.
Yeah.
Like there is a total changing guard in Paris. It's now coming over here, and people are going like, you know, the basics of French cooking is fantastic. I mean, it's great. You know, the Western modern culinary cuisine is built on that. So why are we going to ignore it? We don't, you know, and what happened is that just like anything, when you think of one sort of type of dining and it just becomes a stereotype or a bad homage to what made it great, that's when people start turning away from it. Now people are like, well, we're going to take the better aspects.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, I think a poster boy for this in the next year will probably be Andrew Carmelini, because he is opening Lafayette in this sort of Astor place area, you know, that's sort of right across from Astor Wines and Spirits, that kind of area.
Where do you get the name for the restaurant?
Stop. So
come on, Darren.
So he cooked, of course, French at Cafe Bleu, and you know, which is where he really cut his teeth, and for him to return to it is really exciting. And also not just return to it, you know, but also return to it with the last, you know, 5 years of the work that he's done in Italian cuisine at La Conda Verde and in, you know, melting pot American cuisine at the Dutch. And I think it'll be a really interesting take on those foods, and I'm excited to see
it
come back around.
It's going to be a hot table to get.
Oh, I mean, as everything he does is. And I'm just such a huge fan of his, and I think he deserves so much of the success that he has, and it's good to see.
Few people could really create the scene and fervor that was the opening of the Dutch.
Yeah, I mean, it was a time and place in New York dining, right? I mean,
that really was. If you wanted to hang your hat on something, it was just, that was it. And it delivered. And it was great.
Yeah, I mean, and he knows, you know, I just think that, you know, we talked about Danny Bowen earlier, you know, as being just a lovely human being. And I think that that has a trickle-down quality. I mean, you know, Danny's lovely. His staff is lovely. Andrew Carmelini, you could say the same thing. I mean, he's just a lovely person. And I think, you know, I don't know what he's like as a manager in the kitchen, but, you know, I know from my own interactions with him what a lovely person he is. And I think that comes, that manifests in that just sort of electric feeling, the scene, and, you know, the desire to be there, and the happiness of the staff and all of that.
And also, it's great because, you know, you never know which person that he is inspiring, you know, 5-10 years from now, that will get, like, guy sitting at the top of his game and be like, and he still did it while being very nice, very open, very friendly, that it comes through.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the other exciting restaurants that's going to be coming up in the year is Alder. Well, I do Friesen restaurant.
That's right. that I'm really excited about as well. I mean, you know, Wiley,
genius.
You know, is a genius. Is he
an unsung hero?
No.
Like,
no.
Is he overlooked? No. Someone tried to tell me that last year, and I was like, you know, I was like, I don't think so.
You know, I do think that he's a chef's chef. You know, I do think, you know, whatever that means. I mean,
also,
you know,
someone tried to tell me they hated that phrase last year, chef's chefs, and I was like, well, it applies.
Mean, I sort of hate it too, but for lack of a better descriptor, I mean, I know exactly what it means, and I do think that it's apt. I mean, you know, is he overlooked? I don't think he's overlooked, but I do think that, you know, what he did, I hate to say ahead of its time, because in a sense what he's doing has its own timelessness to it, but you know, New York City has been famously unfriendly to, you know, what I'll cringe to say is like molecular cuisine.
It's no Chicago.
And Chicago is a lot more receptive to it, and as a result, you know, I don't think that he necessarily became the toast of New York from a consumer perspective as a chef.
But he made something that looked incredibly looked like toast but wasn't toast itself.
Yeah. I would high five you again, but I'm afraid of how much it's going to hurt after last.
Bump.
Boom. Oh, that was gentle. He was gentle on me.
How about this? For the food that he's making, which is unaccessible for a large part of the eating population, he's this famous.
Yeah.
Which is no small feat. And he plays the media game. He goes on Top Chef. I mean, he's revered by everybody. And you know what? He's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really nice guy.
2013 trend, nice people in the kitchen.
No. Yeah,
I wouldn't mind it.
But let's talk about his new spot.
Nice. Well, so for me, details are still a little thin on Alder. So, you know, I don't want to hedge too much, but I do know that it's
seats, right?
I know it's a gastropub.
Yeah,
gastropub. And so what a gastropub a la Wiley Dufresne looks like, I don't know. But, you know, I'd like to think that he'll bring some of his, you know, iconic sensibilities to it. But I also think, you know, here's a chef that is adapting. I mean, you know, dining has changed so much in New York City, and as much as, you know, WD50 still has its diehard fans, and I think people are even coming around to it even more now because they are, you know, they've been weaned on, you know, other experiences, and they've watched enough Top Chef to have the sort of like receptacle points to know what it is that he's doing. You know, I think maybe in the back of his mind he's thinking, well, maybe I can try to do what I do, but do it in a context that's a little bit more graspable by a wider group of people.
Just like him and Paul LeBrant going to King and Grove. And, you know, if you ever watch a documentary, he cooked burgers for a while. And, like, he did that, you know, and his sort of attitude is like, I have all this knowledge about cooking. Like, if I'm going to make a burger, it's going to be the best damn burger you ever had.
Yeah.
And with Wiley, the same way, it's like, he understands food at a level that few people really know how to understand and manipulate. It's like, if you said this is a wide difference, hot dog or grilled cheese, you better believe I want to try it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the Paul LeBrant thing, I mean, details on that one are even thinner, but he is coming to Williamsburg to the King Grove.
Which is one of the biggest shocks. That was one of the things when I read.
Yeah.
I went, really?
Is it a shock?
Yes. Think about, I mean, that level of chef, three-star Cortan,
like, but think about all of the restaurants that have been opening up and down Bedford, and like the type of people that are
Paul LeBrant is not going to open Cortan in Williamsburg. I mean, that's
no. But arguably, probably, I think what I'm more shocked about is he's probably the most famous or biggest name chef to come to Williamsburg. I know Pichanong has got that place on the south side, some Chinese food restaurant.
Who?
Pichanong. I'm not getting that right. No, you're getting waved away. I'm getting waved away with his name. Anyway, but so fine. So obviously not him. But for someone of that ilk, that level, to come to Williamsburg, talk. I mean, this is a lot about what people are saying about Williamsburg, how it's, you know, really become this new epicenter of culture at a more mainstream level. But two, the fact that a restaurant like, well, you know, from his stature can be supported there is pretty. It's pretty amazing.
Well, it remains to see to be seen if it can be supported. And let's, you know, just remember, like, what happened with Issa. You know? I mean, I don't know if that came
crowd,
to mind.
The lunch crowd killed, like, the no lunch crowd killed them.
Like, I still haven't been back.
Well, I haven't been back either. And you know, I mean, for those that don't know the story. God, he's so awesome.
He's so great.
And guess what? He likes a lot of my photos on Instagram.
Me too.
He likes some of mine too. And he's such a babe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're such a babe.
I'm going to predict 2013 will be a good year for Ignacio.
I mean, listen, you know, Issa is, you know, Issa was such an exciting restaurant while, you know, Ignacio was involved in it. But, you know, that for, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of different factors at play. But, you know, it didn't make it for one reason or another in its sort of experimental form. And, you know, we have to remember that, like, growth is this sort of organic thing that has to happen gradually and over time, and maybe Williamsburg is now ready for a Paul LeBrant restaurant. I hope that it is.
But this is the thing. It's also a hotel restaurant, which means that there are going to be certain confining restrictions on what he's going to make and what he's going to serve.
Oh, you know, we talked about this last year. Did Nomad put a burger on the menu?
Did they? I don't know. I don't think so.
We could have checked any time this year. I mean, that was like a big contention from last year's episode. Like, that what was there? What was there? No, what if there was, and what the burger would look like?
I mean, look,
huge debate.
I think Nomad, Breslin, John Dory are all examples of hotel restaurants that go above and beyond. But
most of the people that eat at those restaurants are not hotel guests. A lot of them are locals.
Right.
Yeah. Also, Raynard's is another example, just here in Williamsburg.
Exactly.
But I actually don't think. you know, you talk about, you say hotel restaurant in this way that almost sounds like a pejorative, in the sense that, like, you know, a hotel restaurant is, you know, naturally not going to be quite as good as like a standalone restaurant. But I actually totally
I think that
right now, I mean, some of our best restaurants right now are in hotels.
Absolutely. I totally agree, but it's not, he's not going to, what's that dish he does? The garden.
Yeah, the vegetable garden,
which is like, you know, tweezers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to see that type of dish at this restaurant.
Yeah, that dish is astonishing. I remember the first time I tasted it. It's a beautiful dish.
Beautiful to look at, beautiful to taste. But you, so we'll see. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they're, you know, it, King & Grove is, it's a, they got a pool, they got that clientele, they got you know, they're definitely serving that sort of crowd.
And don't forget, there's a whole like apartment complex attached to it as well.
I think it'll do well. It's right in the park. I think. Yeah. I actually think it's a great location, and I'll eat there. I'll definitely eat there, and then
I'll go with you.
Great.
So we're about to wrap this up. We're gonna ask the question that we asked earlier. 2013.
What?
Yeah, we're gonna have to wrap this up. I'm sorry, but what lies in store for Jordana Rothen? Prediction 2013.
Oh well, I would love to talk about health in restaurants.
Yeah, we said one
thing as a thing that could possibly lie in store. I mean, let's put that. So I'm doing one of the projects I'm doing as a freelancer right now is for Food and Wine. I'm interviewing a number of chefs for a large digital project, and you know, one of the things that we talk to them about is kind of trend forecasting, like what people will be talking about in the future. And a lot of them are saying things like ancient grains, you know, like what's the next quinoa kind of thing.
Ugh,
and
boring.
Why is that boring?
Yeah, why is that boring?
It seems like an old topic.
Okay, just relax over there. Oh my god, he split his pants because he ate too many hamburgers. So we can talk about ancient grains. Stop exposing yourself to me, my god. All right, so anyway, people are talking about ancient grains, but I think that health is something that people will be talking about in the next few years. I do think that that's going to be a concern in restaurants, and I do think that, again, it's that conversation about the pendulum. It's like we've swung in this like incredibly indulgent direction of like, you know, pork and foie gras and butter,
pork and foie gras and pork and
more and more and more and more. And I do think that there is a new emphasis on, you know, still delicious, not like, you know, not like cuisine minceur or anything, not like, you know, sort of ascetic food, not monk's food, but food that's wholesome and healthy. I think that we are headed in that direction.
We'll see. I feel like people still want to go out to restaurants and eat things that are finished in butter and salt.
And they will.
Yeah.
But, you know, there'll also be other options.
I think it might just be more people, like the onus is on the person more and
yeah.
I think people understanding that if you go out to eat and someone wants to do the salad or the fish or something like that, there's not going to be that, what are you, like a fucking pussy or something like that, like, no, you can eat the bone marrow and the steak with me. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay, like this person is, you know, they're not drinking tonight, or they're not going for like the red meat, they're gonna eat.
That's interesting, like on the community level, that it would change. I mean, you know,
I mean how many times have you gone out to eat with people and they're like, we're going in, we're yeah. gonna order. You know,
it's an extremely permissive culture. I mean, that's, you know, and our intoxicants are not, it's not, you know, cocaine and you know, our intoxicants are like pork fat and, you know, and butter. So,
and that stuff is equally as bad for you. I mean, a constant diet, it's tough. And it's tough because, and even now you see as a freelancer, things like that, like, it becomes more and more of the role of just like, oh, we're going to this restaurant, we're going to this thing, we're doing, you know, oh, I have to eat here, I have to keep up, I got to keep relevant, I got to go to this restaurant.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, salads and cottage cheese in the morning, or fruit.
Ugh. I mean, I'm a green.
I got a cantaloupe. I'm going to scoop it out.
Put
in some cottage cheese.
I'm a green juice girl, and I would get mercilessly made fun of at Time Out by Mari Uehara in particular for doing that. But it makes me feel good, and it's wholesome, and it's a really good way to get raw vegetables. And frankly, like, listen, we work in food. Like, it is not the worst thing in the world to give ourselves
a break,
a chance for our bodies to regenerate. Like, it's, oh my, this girl over here with her Instagram. Come on. Sit down.
I brought a juice to the office on the last food show I worked on.
Can I just say, do you see what's happening? She's standing on a chair. She's standing on a, there's a girl inside Roberta's standing on a chair so she can Instagram her Bloody Mary.
All right, last thing we're going to talk about, Instagramming food.
She sat down.
Instagramming, Instagramming food, yay, nay.
Yay, but not like that.
Not like that.
Not like that. Don't be showy about it.
Keep the fuck out.
Keep it classy.
Can she, I mean, really? I mean, she's not even taking a sip of it yet. It's just...
The
just,
straw's still
not,
on.
She's not...
She didn't even remove the paper from the straw.
She's kind of short. A better angle.
She will not taste that thing until... And the two of them, they're sitting across from each other. There's this couple, maybe. I'm not even sure. Oh, and they're not enjoying their drinks.
It's President's Weekend brunch at Roberta's.
Yeah, it's
a
couple.
This guy wants to cheers. He's having the whiskey. This girl over here hasn't... She's not done Instagramming yet. Mm-hmm. Cheers. Drink your drinks. Drink your drinks.
Okay. All right. Well, as we make fun of...
That is actually the first time in almost 100 episodes that we have ever broken through the fourth wall. So
thank you, Jordan.
Let's say...
What are you looking forward to? What would you like to see happen in 2013? Let's do two or three things.
I'd like to see healthy food at restaurants.
We already covered that.
Well, it's a thing that I'd like to see.
Great. Moving on. Next.
Why are you so angry about it?
I know. Like, why do you take this umbrage with it?
Look, it's not you. I feel that this...
It's not you.
This healthy... I believe that this has... Everyone always says that. Like, oh, next year we're going to be healthy. Oh, we're moving healthy. And it doesn't happen. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, I'm sorry. Like, the restaurants and the majority of people, when they go out to eat or they eat food, it's things like that. Like, it's not... It's just not going to happen. Like, you're not going to get some healthy thing that compares to a steak when you go out to eat. It's just not like that trend isn't going to pop up.
I'm not saying that it's going to replace indulgent dining. It's just that when you go to restaurants, there should be more options for people who want to eat healthily. And they should listen. Let me tell you something. I went to diner on Saturday night, where I haven't been for dinner long time.
We were right down the street.
Well, I just didn't want to see you.
Fine. Fair enough.
But, you know, it's hard to eat in a restaurant when you have a lot of dietary restrictions. Yeah. And at the moment, I'm on a detox. I apologize to all the chefs and restaurateurs who have inconvenienced over the past 3 weeks, but that's just how it is.
I can't believe you brought your press.
And I had an amazing meal there. And you know what? It was really interesting the way that they did their food because, you know, I told them, you know what it was. I was really polite about it. I mean, I hope I wasn't an asshole. But, you know, they made this, like, hamachi dish that was, like, horseradish and caviar and lemon and olive oil. It's a really interesting way to layer flavor without using fat to do it. And I think that's valid.
I think it costs a lot more than just doing the way that people have been cooking.
Fair.
That's okay. Fine. And people will pay with their wallets and their good health. Moving on.
Next thing I will say that I'll make my annual plea for my craft cocktail dive bar.
Dram still does not fill that niche for you?
No.
How is that not... I feel like Dram is my favorite cocktail bar for that stuff. And it's because you go there and sometimes you'll have Frank there with the tie or sometimes you're over there like Jeff and a wife beater.
I'm sorry, but it's just not dirty enough. If there's no...
Like, do you want like a Mars bar serving those type of cocktails?
Kind of, yeah. I want there to be like the risk that I'm like walking home with lice. Like,
yeah,
or...
And then you're going to pay $14 for a cocktail?
$9 for a cocktail. Between $9 and $11 for a cocktail.
Which is what the price points are at Dram.
Yeah. Dram is not a dive bar. I mean, in what world is Dram a dive bar? Dram's a great bar. I mean, Frank is wonderful. Tanya's incredible, but it's not a dive bar.
Where do you think this place could exist?
Let me tell you. This is where it stems from. First of all, there's evidence that there are people trying it. First of all, there's no preciousness at all. I want it to be I want it to be a dirty bar. I want to feel like... Probably there's someone having sex in the bathroom, cocaine residue, you know, in place. I want it to feel just filthy, okay? Second of all, I want there to be really good music. And this all comes from, by the way, just to go back, we're rewinding like 3 years here with our President's Day show, but Painkiller, it was a tiki bar, but it was also a dive bar.
Oh, you're into tiki drinks?
Not anymore.
Not anymore, but...
It's been 2 years.
Yeah, but when Painkiller opened... It was a great bar, and it was, you know, obviously did tiki drinks, but it was really a dive bar, and I loved that feeling. It was, like, narrow and dank and underground, and you thought that, like, a fireball might, like, zoom through the space at any moment, and you could have shots, and you could have really great drinks, and that is something that I would love. I really would love to have that feeling. And then also, you know, Mother's Ruin is not a dive bar, but it's sort of getting at that kind of thing.
Okay. One last prediction.
What do you think?
I don't care about predictions. I want to know what you predict for yourself, how you see this year unfolding for you.
I'm going to write a book.
Okay.
Really?
Or I'm going to be sort of on my road towards that.
I can't wait to read it.
I think...
Don't ask me about it next year if I don't if I don't have a book deal. Let's not talk about it.
So this is how Predict will open 2014. So your book. You'll be like, shut the fuck up, Greg and Aaron. Well, Jordana, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my God. Thank you guys so much.
It's a shame that it only comes once a year.
Ashonda.
Well, maybe we'll bring you back halfway. Well, you've always been busy. And you used to only do this one because it was the only time you could get out of the office.
That's true.
But now maybe like we can do like a midway checkpoint.
I want to come on with DJ Diesel Boy and do special.
Okay. All right, let's set that up. Let's give people the nuts and bolts. Where can they find you? Twitter, Instagram?
Yes.
To send press list requests?
On Twitter, find me at Jordana Rothman, just my name. On Instagram, I'm at Hips Lips Quips. On Craigslist, I post under Big Boobs Josie.
One last question. Did Jewish food take off in the last year the way we predicted?
Definitely did.
Scandinavian food?
AXA. Yeah. ASCA.
ASCA me next year, I'll tell you.
Okay. All right. So we're going to play a couple tracks.
We're going to play one track.
And then we're going to take a quick pause and reset for Snowden, who will be live in studio.
Which will get stitched together in the podcast and you'll never know.
And then we'll be right back. You'll listen to Snacky Tunes.
Here we go. Another oldie but goodie.
Horrified.
All right, we are back. Snacky Tunes, live in studio. We have Snowden. Why don't we kick this off with a tune? Thank you.
Woo!
Nice. Snowden, welcome to Snacky Tunes. You want to introduce yourselves?
And that song.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, it's so dramatic.
I know. New mic change. That song is So Red, and we're Snowden. And this is, I'm here with Yoey today. Yoey is a bassist in the band.
Hi.
And the lucky owner of some of the best hair to ever come into our studio.
Yeah, that's right.
It's glorious. That's a head of hair, my man.
Thank you, dude.
As one who is losing his, I'm envious.
He has the most hair in the band by far.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good. It's locked. It's that rock and roll.
I was watching a Motley Crue flashback on VH1.
Oh, yeah.
Just like marveling at the do, and then realizing, wow, I have that next to me every night.
Yeah. Are you thrashing that hard? I
try to.
I feel like the slow songs you gotta just whip that hair back and forth.
Oh. If you've got it, use it.
Yeah, if you got it, use it. Hey, can we shout out Preston?
Preston Craig, my brother. One of the
best dudes ever.
Yeah. If you don't know Preston, that's on you, because he knows everybody and he's the best.
That's right, just like you guys.
Hey, by the way, Preston, you think you can get me to that show?
Exactly.
Oh, hey, can you get me on stage at ACL for Girl Talk? Okay, cool. Thanks, Preston.
Oh, my God. See, now it's expected of him all the time, and now he's like, ugh, I got to deliver.
Oh, he feels the pressure?
You know what? I think he's above the pressure, actually.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Is that's what's getting to him?
Yeah.
and Jordan, it's good to see you, as always, buddy.
Yeah, good to see you. I miss you guys.
I miss you. Well, that's what happens when you leave town.
Yeah, I know.
Move to Austin. I know.
So let's take an examination of the last, let's say, 3 years or so since Snowden came out, went away. Now it's on its way back.
That's right.
What happened in those years?
I was trying to find a good way to to release the record, and that stuff takes time. So finally got it put together, and my friend in Kings of Leon is a really good guy, and he's a big lover. We love the same music, and he was like, I think I want to put your record out through our little label, and since he's such a good guy and we get along on so many fronts, it was like, okay, well, that makes sense. I trust that this will work out. So that's what we did, and it takes time, but hopefully it's worth the wait.
Is that new song that you just played on the record?
It is.
Well, then it's worth the wait.
It is worth the wait. So how did it go? Like, where did you, you had a full band, they're not really part of it anymore. It's like, and what type of changes did you approach to this record and this time around versus, when you just kind of came out of Atlanta as a group, 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, I mean, it takes a lot of energy to keep a band going over such a long period of time between releases, and people grow up and they have kids and they get real jobs.
I don't quite understand.
You're in Williamsburg. You guys are still young. You're like 21, 22. But when you get older, you realize that comes knocking at your door, and your girlfriend, since you started the band, is biological clock is ticking, and
I've seen my cousin Vinny.
Yeah,
I know how it works.
Sometimes the baby's got to drop before the album does.
Ba-dum-bum.
Pretty good. Thank you. It's pretty good. And then, how did you keep it going?
The
curse, the blessing, and the curse.
Maniacal obsession with, this is. I have to do this. I've got to get this record out. This record has been in the works. I mean, some of these songs were written 6 years ago, and so it was like.
Do you feel that it's out of you now? Have you pulled it from the depth of your soul and put it into some form?
When I went to the studio and when I left the studio, I hadn't listened to a single cut of the track since. This is stuff that I listened to every day for hours while I was pouring over it. And Preston's putting together a light show, and I had to pull up copies of the tracks from the record that I had specifically. I'm just like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear things that I could have changed and everything. And I had to listen to them, and I was going nuts, like having to sync up the light show to these tracks and headphones.
In a good way?
No, I mean, it was like, I wanted to put it away. I wanted to put it to bed, like, especially like the recorded
part.
But the recorded part.
Okay, because you're going to go tour.
There's something bizarre about, I guess, if you're like a. When you work in a medium that there's one version and then that's out, and that's what's, whether it's like a book or a record, and once it's out, that's it. That's the only version.
You appreciate something like when Justin Bieber releases his album as an acoustic version?
I mean, first of all, the Beeb, if you will.
The Beebs.
I mean, transcends
all place and time.
Yeah, exactly. So what Beeb does is greatness.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get someplace, you know, a few levels below that to be satisfied.
I mean, it seems like an appropriate place to be.
Mm. Yeah, a few steps.
Bieber, a couple of steps down.
Scrubbing Beeb's bowl would be...
Yeah.
Snowed
in. A few steps below the Beeb's.
Making six figures.
That's an interesting press pull quote.
Yeah.
Let's hear another song.
You want to rip another jam?
Yeah, let's rip another tune.
Well, just so you know, we are recording this into a podcast, and so this will be recorded in another form.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can maybe, if you like this better, you can just kind of...
Yeah, just slip this track in.
Snacky tunes, snacky cut.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh, snacky cut.
Or we like to call it a tasty track.
Nice.
No, we don't.
Well, I do.
Oh, okay. What up, Jack?
Turn the mic up. Your mic up.
This okay.
One. Yeah.
All right, we're going to turn the mic up. All right, so here we go. We got Snowden recording it.
Check, check, check.
Yeah? What are you going to play?
This song is called...
No, reverb. Reverb, come on.
Yeah, you want
to... Yeah.
This song's called Anemone Arms.
Oh, my God. Here we go. President's
Saturday,
Day.
Saturday.
Can we hang out with that microphone after you leave? And just do... what are they called? Pukes?
You can do great things with this microphone.
All right, here you go. Live on Snacky Tunes.
We are your sympathy.
a little mellow in and out.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't prepared to come in here and drop the rock.
You can always drop the rock here.
Right.
Man, it used to be when we used to have DJs on here and they'd be doing, you know, big club sets at 2:30.
So, Ibiza in a rail car.
So what is being on the Kings of Leon label like? Does that influence your... Are you a Prince of Leon?
Yeah. Squire of Leon.
Squire.
I'm a scribe, joker, maybe?
Yeah.
In the court of...
The Duke of Leon.
Yes. Food tester.
Yeah.
That'd be applied to the show. Apply to the show? What?
Hey, so you've lived in Austin, New York, and Atlanta. Who's got the best food?
Oh, man.
As the official food taster for Kings of Leon.
Yeah. Oh, God.
No pressure.
I tell you, Atlanta's got great food. Atlanta's got a really great food culture.
What was that place across the street from MJQ that had like the rib tips and...
It's called the Claremont, Greg.
No, not the Claremont.
Yeah.
No,
that was... There were tips of ribs there. And nipples.
Across from MJQ...
Definitely some tips.
No, MJQ Drunken Unicorn, it had like the rib tips. It was like the biker bar.
The biker bar. Oh, I think it was called like Duke's or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rib tips, man. Gotta love them.
It's a... oddly enough, it's a black biker bar.
No, it is.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
And it's
the real deal. We walked in there.
Wait, how's that an enigma?
Well, I mean, whenever I see black bikers on Harleys, it's like, whoa, awesome. You know,
fair.
And to see an entire establishment devoted to that, you know, is
I feel like it's unique. Maybe not an enigma.
Yeah.
By the way,
we walked in there after one of Preston's parties, and they were like, "Y'all in a band?" I was like, "No."
Yes, just say yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, so what's it like being the Squire of Leon?
Let's see. Where does that come from?
Yeah, what is?
Turn down. Turn down the channels to the right. All of them. Yeah, master. What's it like? They're good guys. My main guy is the bass player and he's a big, you know, pitchfork aficionado, and so we'll sit there and talk about, you know, did Kanye deserve a 10 and
yes,
yeah.
Well, is it yes?
Or did he deserve a monkey peeing into his mouth, you know?
Oh.
But anyway, so we just we love the same music, and it was like, you know, they've got, you know, finances to invest into it, and that's, you know,
they've done all right.
I mean, this question is going to this question will dog you your entire lead up. Someone will inevitably ask about it.
Yeah.
So consider this like a practice
a little talk.
Yeah.
For your
I have friendly fire here.
Well, this is just, you know, it's like people are going to be like,
is this the first album they put out on their label?
They have put out two other records, one by
Justin Bieber's first single,
which is
Never
still,
Say Never.
Yeah. But I mean, they put out. They started by putting out their friends' band in Nashville, which is a band called The Features.
Okay.
And then they did a record by this band called Turbo Fruits, which is the old bass player from Be Your Own Pet.
Yep.
And
Be Your Own Pet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Wow.
I know. Where are they now?
What?
In Turbo Fruits.
Yeah.
Exactly where they are.
Man, you know, there are so many bands that I've seen, like, not bands I've just seen, like, once, like, so many times in, like, the scene, like, you know, the South By and the Circuit and things like that, that I don't even think about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whatever happened to them?
You're about to get back into it.
I mean,
you were of that 2004-2005
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Did your feet ever get dry, you know?
Totally. I mean, it's been six and a half years since when my record came out, my last record came out.
So,
your feet are dry, like, I mean, especially for a band like me, we did all right, but we didn't really get, you know, we didn't get too wet, to continue on the metaphor.
Are you trying to get soaking now?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to
soak.
Yeah, so now the next year it'll be head deep.
How do you train?
Star jumps, Herkies. I actually, I've been singing and playing guitar for the last 2 weeks, trying to get to where my hand doesn't cramp during some of the songs, and so that my voice doesn't go out like the first show, because it's been so long since I've sang and played, you know, 10 days in a row. So
I mean, and what is your, you know, last question before we hear one more song? What is your approach to this, you know, second time around? You know, are the things that you didn't do the first time that you would like to do this time, or is there a certain like mental approach you'd like to see this time around?
Let's see. I am not going to take things quite as seriously this time. I'm trying to have a lot more fun and not be nervous about things.
That's
And that's it. That's yeah. That's life, right?
Yeah.
So what are you going to eat on the road? What are you looking forward to?
I am a Subway sandwich every day guy.
Are you upset that the $5 foot long is actually the $5 11 inch long?
You know, I saw that post on Gawker about the bread. I can do without the inch. You know, I'm not gonna.
That is not what
phrasing.
She said.
Phrasing.
Okay. Well, so
that's it. Just Subway. There's no city. There's no meal. No city that you're like. When I go back on tour, I'm gonna go eat here.
Oh well, you see, that's every time we go into a city. Like my other guitar player, he was pulling up Diners and Dives, and we were hitting that in every city.
Yeah.
But man, when you do a Diners and Dine before a show, I mean,
that's the after party.
It sits in you like a rock, and that rock is not. Which you want to be
wrong type of rock.
You don't want to rock out
like a
with that.
Molten cheese, potato-y oil.
Shrimp. We were in Chicago and we did like po' boys and stuff. And
you were feeling po' boys.
Just the coma for sound check.
Yeah.
You know.
So Nuts and Bolts, where people can find you. And
where can they get the new album?
The record doesn't come out till May 14th, but the singles and stuff are up on our Facebook, Snowden. You know, Snowden Music. So
thank you, Presence Day. Thank you to Jordana, the whole Heritage family. And I will be in Saigon for the next 2 weeks.
I'll be here.
He'll be here. So, fantastic.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Preston.
Yeah.
What are you going to take us out with?
This song is called Keep Quiet.
All right.
Another mellow tune. Okay.
Empty at night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.